Okay, so welcome everybody to this panel discussion on Europe is revolting, recession and rebellion. Welcome this evening. Before I begin the panel, I'd like to acknowledge that we are holding this conference on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations, and that we pay our respect to our elders, those past and present. We acknowledge that the ownership of the land was never ceded, and it always will be, always was and always will be Aboriginal land. So welcome to this panel. My name is Rebecca and I'll be chairing the session this evening, but I am very, very pleased to present to you two very fine speakers this evening. On my right, just figuratively though, is Thanasis Koukoulis, who is a Greek socialist from the International Workers' Left, a participant in the recent general strikes in Greece and the campaign against the austerity measures there. And I have on my left Joe Carolyn, who is a revolutionary socialist who's central to organising the militant union Unite in New Zealand at the moment, but is, as soon as he opens his mouth, you will tell, an Irish revolutionary who has been active as a socialist in Ireland from the 1990s. So without further ado, please welcome our speakers and I'll get Thanasis to kick us off.
Comrades, 1 year ago, the eyes of capitalists around Europe and of the governments were concentrated to Greece. Greece was the first victim of the so-called reorganization of European debt system, of European way to handle with the crisis. At that time, we were saying that, look, it is not only us, it is not only Greece, it is not only Greek workers that are going to pay. Greece is just the first victim. Greece is just the experiment for the rest, for the European capitalists, to see if this politics can move forward to the Arab pigs. And pigs is the initial of Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain, which, except from being in a bad economical situation, they are countries that their working classes and youth have proved through history that they know how to fight. So pigs can fight, and this is the message that I want to bring you from Greece today. So, but I would like to take things a little bit from the beginning, from the financial, the economical basis of it. When PASOK was elected in 2009, PASOK, if you know, we have a socialist government, meaning a social democratic government, that came after the right party, Karamanlis party, 2009. So they said, there is money. They said, yes, we can. So after being elected, actually they discovered there is no money, that they had misunderstood the figures of the public funds and whatever, and they agreed with European Union, European Central Bank and IMF to an austerity plan of 3 years from 2010 till 2013 in order Greek economy to borrow 110 billion euros to pay the debt. Greek debt was at that time 350 billion euros, which for an economy like Greek, maybe for your economy does not seem a big number, but it's enormous life for an economy like this. So at that time, deficit was 12% of Greek GDP, which was four times the accepted deficit in Eurozone, and debt was 120% of GDP, which was two times the accepted debt in Eurozone. So they said, only till 2013. the deficit will become 3%, we accept it, and the debt maybe not so much, but it will fall dramatically. And then Greek economy will be able to borrow again from the markets that couldn't at this moment, because from 5% they had to borrow with 10%, and that's why they entered this mechanism. And then development will start as small sacrifices for all, and afterwards we will be okay. What happens 1 year later? March 2010. Figures are not the predicted ones. Because capitalism, global crisis, is internationally much deeper and much longer than they expected. And Greeks, inside this, which is already the weak link of European capitalism, GDP in 2010 fell dramatically by 6% in Greece. This was over every estimation, and debt estimation for the end of 2010-11 is 153%. Why this? Although we had wages going down, although unemployment in Greece right now is 15%, officially speaking, which means over 20%. Although public servants have 13th and 14th salary cut per year, which means bonuses for Christmas, Easter, summer vacation, etc. Although schools and hospitals close, they call it merge. Although VAT has gone from 18% to 23% for some goods, although all these things happened, all 110 billion euros have been going to interests, so the debt is the same, and GDP is falling, falling dramatically, so the percentage of the debt over GDP is rising. So what's next? They say a second agreement with IMF and European Union. Extension of payment of the loan till 2016. 26 more billions from wages and taxation of consumption. And 50 more billions from privatizations. What they mean privatizations? For Greece, 15 billion they plan to take it from privatization of public electricity, telecoms, water service, Greek oil company, mining state companies, post office company, hippodrome, harbors, airports, motorways, and radio TV frequencies, which means almost all public space in Greece. And another 35 billion from buildings and land from the state that are going they intend to sell. So Greece, if all these measures pass, will be transformed to a completely different country. Why all this? They tell us. You have a big debt because you don't produce, you consume more than you produce, the state is huge, and public servants are lazy, and corruption is huge. The truth is, the debt in Greece is huge, because it's a product of capitalists and their governments till now that made it so huge. And why is Greece in crisis with high so debt right now? For certain reasons. First of all, banks were hit. Banks in Greece is a very strong element for capitalists around the area of Balkans, etc. Construction was hit. Balkans, Middle East, etc. You remember Dubai? Greek construction companies were in Dubai. Commerce. Greece is well known as merchants of Balkans. Fell dramatically. Second reason, the cost of state intervention for the banks. Karamanlis government, the previous government, spent 28 billion to give to the banks, to Greek banks, to save the banks. PASOK, within 1.5 years, spent 30 billion first and another 25 billion, which was totally 83 billion for warranties to the banks and hot money. Hot money were 26 billion out of the 23, of the 83. So all austerity program till now, all these wage cuts, this unemployment, layoffs of temporary workers in public sector, etc., etc., all these together have gathered 25 billions. And they gave hot money to the banks, 26 billions plus other 60 billions for warranties. Number three reason, the cost of 20 years of neoliberalism in Greece. In 1990s, 45% was the percentage of taxation for big companies. Right now, it is only 20% for industry and 11% for the banks. So, public economics income is coming. 60% of its income from taxing goods, consumption, and only 40% from taxation, but what taxation? Only salaries taxation. Number four reason, international speculation. I told you in the beginning, from 5%, the interests became 10% in order for countries like Greece to borrow. And number five, corruption. Yes, corruption, which was Greek governments and foreign companies together with Greek capitalists. And corruption like what? I will give you two slight examples. We had Olympic Games. Everybody, except from Coalition of Radical Left, where our organization belongs also, was nationally very proud. So, one of the things that the government had to do to have these Olympic Games was to buy the C4I system. What is the C4I system? It was a huge eye to watch terrorists, we suppose Arabs and Greeks, all over Mediterranean, for the safety of Olympic Games. So, for this C4I, 100 million euros were given, and it is proved from Siemens, etc., to ministers of PASOK and New Democracy, which is the right party. Black money. So, unfortunately, this C4I could not be delivered during the Olympic Games. It was delivered 6 years later, 2010, and unfortunately, it doesn't work. It is fortunately because we don't have a huge eye, but unfortunately, we have paid billions for this C4I. Another small example of corruption is armament. Greece is a bigger buyer of armament in Europe. It's only compared to Israel, with which Greek governments have a very good relation lately. A German company had bought shipyards that were privatized in Greece. And this company, unfortunately for us, had to construct two submarines for Greek army. All electronical systems against by Siemens, by chance. So they delivered these two submarines, but they had a slight problem. There was an inclination. They were not steady. They were unstable and not navigable. They could not even they could not even exit Piraeus port. Ex-ministers were accused for corruption, it was true, but again the money has gone. Also, on top of all this, because we are speaking of armament, Greece is supporting in the Libya process with battleships, with helicopters, with AWACS, and Greek government gives Creta a harbor and a military base for the bombards, the aircrafts to go to bombard Libya. For Greece, this is 6.5 million per month. So, after having said all this, let's go to what is the result of all this to the people, except from suffer and pain. The result is permanent resistance for 1.5 years now. We have 10 or 11, I don't remember the number, general strikes within the last 1.5 years. People fighting with the police every time outside the parliament trying to get in, and not anarchists or far left organizations, but members of the unions. We have very militant strikes and durational strikes in sectors like transportation, buses, trains, metro, all together. For 1 month they were striking last month. We have strikes that, like the doctors in health, in public hospitals that occupy the Ministry of Health. We have the won't pay movement, which is a movement of people who refuse to pay the tickets in buses, etc., etc., because they don't have, they don't want, they don't pay. And in this movement, our organization and other organizations of radical left have played a significant role. And there was a first victory out of this movement, which was 50% deduction went down to the fee that somebody needs to pay at highways. And it's going on. Temporary workers also at local authorities, which are laid off by tens of thousands, have for 1 month occupied the central town hall of Athens. And also, instead of public electricity privatization, the Union of Public Electricity Workers has announced that from mid of May, if they enter the parliament with this decision, they will go on strike, not for 1 day, but for longer. But there are also other forms of resistance. 30 kilometers from Athens, there is a small village of 5,000 inhabitants called Keratea, which for all the people there, all 5,000 people, for 4 months now, they are fighting with the police. Half of the police of Athens has been transported there because they want to build a landfill, a waste, a place for digging waste, and with the support of various organizations of the left and of unions, 2 days before, the government announced that they will withdraw all the police force from there, and they will start from scratch the discussions, the negotiations for this landfill. There was 300 immigrants, undocumented immigrants, hunger strike for 40 days that we supported a lot, and which won very significant things for themselves, stay permits, not permanent ones, but temporary for the moment, but also many significant things for other immigrants, like lowered the amount of proved days of work per year that you have to renew your stay permit if you are an immigrant. It used to be 200 and now it is 120. We were asking for disconnection, but it was lowered. And also the proved amount of days of proved work for every worker, not only immigrants, to renew their health insurance from 80 days per year to 50 days per year, which is very significant, very important for unemployed people in the time of crisis like this one. Everywhere that PASOK ministers and members of parliament are going, they face people who attack physically on them, throw yogurts, throw eggs, etc., etc. Vice President at Keratea had a yogurt on his face. Health Ministry was spoiled by eggs last week. Attacks to MPs of PASOK, like one that dared to pass through the highway barriers and in front of the movement won't pay, declare, I want to pay. So this guy, unfortunately, was saved by the police. In Paris, vice president of the government goes to talk to Greek audience, and he cannot talk because his talk is interrupted by angry Greek students and immigrants there. In Berlin, the prime minister Papandreou went to speak at a conference some time ago. It was again not possible because he was interrupted by angry Greeks. So for all this, Syriza, radical coalition left, coalition of radical left, and the left in general is accused. Instead of the truth, which is that government is isolated, that capitalists are in panic, and they try to say that anger is not of the majority of the society against them, but of some hard left minorities. Actually, they are the minority. The political situation now is that there are two blocks, for and against the measures coming from the agreement with IMF and European Central Bank. The four group, the ones that are four, has fallen in the polls. All the parties together, PASOK, New Democracy, the far right, Democratic Left, which is a split from Syriza to the right towards PASOK, and Democratic Alliance, which is a split from New Democracy, but also together with the main politics of the capitalists, from 85% to 50%, all this together. So the problem is not that there is no anger, is not that the people do not resist. The problem is that union leadership does not do something more than one general strike every 2 months, and that left is under the circumstances for Communist Party, which is conservative and sectarian, but also for Synaspismos, which is part of coalition of radical left, which was very friendly to EU, to European Union, and very realistic, trying to find money to borrow cheaper from European Central Bank, but had made some steps lately to the left because of the left tendency of Syriza that would participate. Also, that took part in the last municipal elections with a separate list, with the slogans "Overthrow the government now," "Refusal of debt payment," "Freeze debt payment now," "Banks to public sector," and "Taxation of big companies." So, comrades, I could say much, but I will try to conclude in this way. There is a European dimension in all this. Greece is the first victim. The agreement for euro, which is trying to save the banks and try to save the states that have problems for European Union, is the enormous amount of 750 billion euros. 30% of this money is supposed to go to the banks, and 70% to the states. In this agreement for the euro, already, the next victims are Ireland, which has already, and I will not talk more about that, because the comment is going to talk, is Portugal, whose government fell some time ago, not long away, but the capitalists prepared the entry in this mechanism. And following is Spain and Italy, not to say that even Britain will need some help, and not to say that even France and Germany will need some help in the near future. Resistance is present not only in Greece. In Britain we have seen huge student demonstrations. In Spain and France, huge strikes. Even in Hungary and Romania, we have seen people, workers going down to the streets with slogans like "We are Greece." We were very proud of that, not nationalistically speaking, but in a sense of understanding that our common future is struggle and resistance if we want a better future in life. The prognosis is not sure. We cannot say we will win 100%, but we can say that Europe is changing dramatically. That fight has historical dimensions. That workers in Europe have experience how to fight, and that if they win, it will be a big defeat for us, but if we win, it will be a very hard defeat for them.
And now we'll hear from Joe Carolyn.
Thanks, everybody. And I, too, would just like to, before I start, pay my respects to the peoples of the Kulin Nation and also to the many Irish people who had to come to Australia through no fault of their own, not through choice, but who were deported as prisoners, as political prisoners, I suppose, here. And unfortunately, you're going to see lots more of us coming. There's a Irish comedian called Tommy Tiernan, and he always says, like, the Irish, we've never invaded anyone. No. And boss. You see, two of us arrived to your town armed with nothing but a rucksack and a phone number. And we go to the local hostel, and 2 weeks later, 65 of us were married. So, you know, there's another generation of what we call Jories, the teardrops, people who are emigrating. Because there is no work at home. And maybe I'm going to, rather than give you all the statistics, Kieran's written an excellent book here with all the statistics that you need. But I might actually tell a personal story of just my own family to illustrate it. So we're the pigs. Well, we're the GI. G.I. I'm G.I. Joe. But the Greeks, you see, the dirty nationalists, they had a slogan 5 or 6 months ago, and it was, we are not Irish, we will fight. Right? And I want to... Of course, not the comrades from the International Workers' Bank. But I just want to talk to that. Why you haven't seen general strikes in Ireland, and it is important. You know, you've seen them in Portugal, you've seen them in Spain, you've seen them in Greece. Why not in Ireland? And it's not for the lack of our revolutionary tradition. We've had six of the fuckers in 800 years. You know, 1916, if you saw Win the Checks the Barley, you know, the Ken Loach movie, you know, everybody rose in revolt. 1870, 1848, 1798 after the French Revolution. We've had a couple of revolutions, you know. You might expect a bit of action by now. But, of course, I'm here to also speak about the treacherous role of the Labour Party and the trade union bureaucracy. So, as I've said, Ireland has had a revolutionary tradition. But by and large, it's been more or less tied up with the issues of national liberation. You know, national liberation from our bigger neighbour to the east. And I think now what we're starting to see emerge in Ireland is, for the first time, revolutionary Marxism, politics of revolutionary socialism actually earning its place on the left in Ireland as well, with the election of five comrades to the parliament. So we might not be seeing the economic struggle through the trade union movement, but definitely there's something happening in politics in Ireland and there. So I just want to kind of explain just a little bit of the background, how we got into this mess. And I mean, 5-10 years ago, you know, capitalists were triumphant about the Celtic Tiger. Do you remember all of that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was growing at 8-9% per year, phenomenal growth rates, you know, that probably you don't see anywhere else except China. You know, and I lived there at the time, and it was just obscene, right? And I actually thought we were losing a lot of our old, you know, character. You know, huge financial buildings, you know, everybody buying bloody houses. I mean, I was on quite a low wage, and I know what a house should really cost. You know, but people actually, you know, there was this pyramid, Ponzi scheme, and houses were suddenly worth, you know, $1 million, $1.5 million. For little working class, you know, Coronation Street. You know, in Dublin, you know, Stony Meadow, you know, it was just, so it was a property. But also, the Irish ruling class. Fianna Fáil was the party that had ruled Ireland until the slaughter a couple of months ago, and for 25, 30 years, unbroken. And they had created basically a tax haven for American multinational capitalism in Ireland. You know, the official corporate tax was 12.5%, but actually most of these guys didn't pay anything at all, you know. They had an educated workforce that spoke English, you know, it was their beachhead into Europe. So all the Dells, the Intels, you know, the whole Silicon Valley stuff all arrived at us. And they used us. And, you know, the law of comparative advantage, as soon as Latvia and Estonia started saying, oh, well, we'll lower us to 10, you know, well, then they've got no loyalty to them, do they? So those kind of, the perfect storm, the crisis within that started to appear around about 2007, 2008. And, of course, with the crash in Wall Street, we then found out how attached the Irish banks were to American capital with huge toxic debt, you know, black holes. Kieran's book has got all the details that you need, but, you know, we're bankrupt. Suddenly we go from, you know, the doyen of international capitalism, Celtic Tiger, to the country is bankrupt. And they've thrown billions at the banks. And there's been a huge ideological attack on workers as well. Workers who worked hard, like my parents, who paid tax all their bloody lives, are now having their pensions savaged, are having our hospitals closed, our public services attacked, right? And we didn't gamble in the casino. The rich did. And there's plenty of bloody money still in Ireland, you know. So actually the rich should pay for their own gambling debts. But that's not what's happening. We're meant to pay, right? And then this explains the political crisis that we're starting to see. Fianna Fáil had ruled Ireland since the War of Independence. If you remember the wind that checks the barley, you remember the guy who says, hold on to your guns, right? I think it was more a Connollyite like myself. But anyway, we had a civil war in Ireland. And that explains why we've got two right-wing parties that contest each other. Fianna Fáil was the one that actually kept on fighting the civil war for a while and was seen by many Irish workers to be, you know, a little bit stauncher, you know, a little bit more nationalistic. It didn't make the treaty with the British. It kind of had a commitment to a united Ireland. And it also had this economic populism where it delivered scraps. You know, we didn't really have a fully formed welfare state with an NHS or anything like that, but it did give fundamental small reforms to the working class that earned that loyalty. That changed, in the last period, where it actually became a party of a massive big business, property developers, you know, American capitalists, etc., and synonymous again with corruption. You know, half the filth in Fianna Fáil, any decent society should be in prison or shot. But they constantly evaded any kind of prosecution, whereas working class people would be jailed in Ireland, you know, for stealing food, etc. So there began to develop a hatred for this party, Fianna Fáil. And we just had what we called the riot at the ballot box. Right, and people didn't feel because of the trade union bureaucracy kept stifling things. People lashed out at them at the recent election a few months ago, and they went from the dominant party in Ireland with, you know, 90 MPs or whatever down to 20. Right, absolutely slaughtered. And their coalition partners, the Greens. Here's a warning to anyone who believes in the slogan, neither left nor right, but far ahead or whatever. You know, they joined the coalition with the right wing, right? They sold out three of their principles. One, anti-war. They had marched with us against the use of Shannon Airport, right? Troops and renditions continued to fly through Shannon Airport, you know. Two, shell oil, right? A huge amount of oil has been found off the west coast of Ireland. Now, the politics of oil extraction and stuff post-BP, but, you know, if those resources were owned by Ireland, like Norway or whatever, you know, anyway, that was sold out to them for a dollar. Anyway, the Greens, right, they sold out even on their core principles. But they also joined with Fianna Fáil in the attack on working class people. They are completely wiped out, will never ever be a Green MP in Ireland again. And that space on the radical left is now occupied by the radical left. So just to illustrate some of the devastation that led to this, I just want to tell you about when I last went home. Right, so I'm an immigrant to go home. And when things were booming, I used to feel shit, you know, because I worked for a low wage, organizing low paid workers in New Zealand, and I'd come back and everybody's slashing, you know. Yeah, look at my car, look at my house, and I'm going, yeah. How can you pay for this? What are you getting a postman? But anyway. But, you know, I did feel a bit, you know, well, yeah, I'm possibly the only person to emigrate from Ireland in a boom. But when I last came home, it was just, I was shocked. You know, you can read about it, but it is actually shocking to see person after person, the personal devastation, the crisis. It's been, like, my dad worked hard all his life. He's a teacher, he's a union, you know, and they're slashing his pension. Right? And they pay huge amounts of tax. They can't get decent healthcare. We've got queues in our hospital, trolleys pile up. Any Irish here? You know what I'm talking about, right? Go to A&E on a Friday night. Piles of people lying on trolleys. Absolutely obscene. At my shopping centre, the local shopping centre, every single shop in it, bar two, empty, with two let signs on it. I kept seeing it, two let, everywhere. Empty office blocks, two let. You know, the whole country had gone down the two let. And it was a two letarian state. And the attack on public services as well. I couldn't understand. The fucking banks are just there. You know, you're just ready to throw a brick at them. But that's not what's happening. They're closing the hospitals. You know, they're closing the school. They don't even give us the nicety of pretending that it's a marriage. You know, they just close them, right? And this is part of the fury of ordinary people. You know, one of the left-wing TDs who was elected was from a rural area. You know, it's a long way to Tipperary, right? That's where they're from, you know. Well, near there. But, you know, they organized 25,000 people to march in that little small town against the closure of the hospitals. So this is the anger that people are feeling. My sister lost her job in the supermarket where she was a delegate. She can't find a job for 3 years now. You know what I mean? And my auntie, who worked in the hospital that they closed, she had 3 pay cuts, you know, year after year, attacking the nurses, right? This is what they're doing. My uncle, who's a decent delegate up at the Dole, right? He's seeing who's got jobs left now. He's working at the welfare centre, you know, and he's nearly having a nervous breakdown. He's so angry at his union officials that they won't call it strike, that they voted for strike. They voted for strike 3 or 4 times, and it keeps getting sabotaged by the union bureaucrats. And that it's, you know, he's either going to have a breakdown or join the revolution. So I'm going, Pete, join the revolution. And I think this is very important, what's happened with the election of five revolutionaries to the parliament, is people go, at last there is hope, right? It's not just these guys frothing at the mouth and giving out the leaflets. You know, at my bus canteen, you know, even though we do, well, don't froth it, man, that much. But, you know, for years and years, we've done consistent hard work. The graft that you guys are doing here, right? We did our industrial sales at the bus canteens, at the hospitals in the morning. You know, I used to get out every morning at 5 a.m. to gather with my neighbors, gather our bins, because we refused to pay the bin tax. And, you know, and do a communal dump down by the hospital. And I remember at that time thinking, what the fuck am I doing? You know, it's 5 a.m. It's raining. I'm covered in shit. I've got to go to work. Here come the cops. Oh, Jesus. I couldn't see why we were, you know, it just looked hopeless. But actually, through struggles like that, I think we connected with another group that the left needs to do work with. And that's like in the community, like working class people, but organizing the community, not just in the workplace too. And we actually built up, not red bases, you know what I mean? But, you know, communities were actually respected socialists as fighters, as people who went to prison, you know what I mean? And to oppose unjust taxes, as people who showed that with direct action that we could resist neoliberal attacks. So in those areas, by and large in Dublin at the minute, the main city, but we succeeded in actually winning the trust of the working class. And the revolutionary left in Ireland isn't, much larger than, you know, here in Australia. But I think that kind of work in the community, as well as the union, as well as the various movements, the anti-war movement, anti-globalization movement, was extremely important. And it has won us the loyalty of working class people. So, what's happening now? Well, the comrade from Greece has said, we are also faced with the EU, IMF, and financial attack on us. IMF, remember my Korean friends telling me about 10 years ago, in Korea it meant, I am. Maybe for the Father Ted fans, that I am fat. is what Irish people, we resent it, you know, and it's not just nationalism. You know, people resent that these guys who were running Ireland squandered the wealth, and now we're a basket case, you know, and the IMF is going to run things. There's actually huge anger there against the IMF. So part of the SWP, which I was part of, as part of the United Left Alliance, is saying that we should have a referendum now on the EU-IMF deal, because all the political class didn't allow the people to decide. You know what I mean? It wasn't even an electoral issue. And so that call for a referendum has got huge support now amongst people, because we've won a couple of those. I don't know if you know that, but, you know, the small radical left has defeated, various proposals from Europe 3 or 4 times, right, with the Nice Treaty and before it there as well. If we got a vote like the people did, if people say, what's the difference between Ireland and Iceland, you know, 1 letter in 6 months? Yeah. Well, if we got a chance, we would smash that, right? I'd say 80%, 90% of them would smash the IMF. So that's one thing. Second, the riot at the ballot box is very, very important, right? There's been a huge swing to the left in Ireland. Yeah, you've got the two right-wing parties, and one right-wing party got 9% from the other, right? Blah, blah, blah. But the growth in the left has gone from what was always seen as a bit marginal in Ireland in Civil War politics. 15-20% of people voted left. And that's grown to 43 or 44%, right? So that's been a big growth, right? The main recipient of that was the Labour Party, right? And interestingly enough, the role of the dirty Stalinists. We used to have a Stalinist party in Ireland called the Workers' Party, and it joined Labour, right? And Labour was going, oh, yeah, that's great, taking them over, and no, the other way around. The Stalinists worked their way up, and they controlled the unions in Ireland, and they also controlled the Labour Party. The current leader, Eamon Gilmore, is there. And those lying bastards, right, said before the election that they would renegotiate the EU-IMF deal, that they would protect public sector jobs, and that they would rejig some of the unfair tax things we're going and put the burden onto them. Here's what's happened in the first month of the new Irish government. They have accepted fully the terms of the EU-IMF, right, and have done a stress test which will give the banks a further 86 billion euro, right? That's the first thing that they've done. The second thing that they've done is to say that the public sector is now inefficient and we must have savings. So the Labour Party, which is funded by public sector workers like my Uncle Patsy, who's gone fucking bananas up at the Dole Centre in Dundalk, they are going to sack 25,000 public sector workers for a start. Right? And on the unfair taxes, what are they coming back again with except the bin charges and the water charges that we already defeated? Right? And they're going to attack us again. Do you know what? Good. Thank you very much. Right? Because you are giving us the working class. You are giving us the work. You're attacking the public sector workers. We'll be with them on the picket lines. You're attacking the working class in the community that isn't organized in unions, but it's organized in its community. Thank you very much. We will be with them on their lines. And you're running terrified of the idea that we can have a referendum on the IMF because you know that we will defeat it. So that's with Labour, right? But you've also had a growth in two other forces on the left in Ireland. One is Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin, I think we should consider as part of the left. Other groups in Ireland don't agree. But by and large, they get votes from working class people. They're a very contradictory organization. In the north of Ireland, for example, they're in the government. Right? They're in actually coalition with Ian Paisley's DUP. A nicer bunch of people you'd never meet. You know, 40 years fighting the war and then they all get on like that? Weird. But, but I think they're voters, you see. Their support base is different, right? We have to differentiate from the people who vote for reformist organizations and the leadership of those. And I think that by and large, you know, the people who also voted for Sinn Féin, and they got like 14 MPs elected, you know, from five, huge vote swing there. Those are good people, right? We shouldn't be sectarian to those people. They're going to be part of a process that moves even further to the left. And that, lastly, the formation of the United Left Alliance is a very, very positive development that I hope can actually start triggering through the logjam that we have in the trade unions, right? For too long, people like us have been seen as marginal voices within the trade union movement. Yes, you argue a good case. Yes, you're there, you know, in the year of occupations that we had in 2009, Waterford Class occupied, Thomas Cook occupied. There was this whole wave of occupations after the kind of the Chicago window and doors. Stuff, we took the, look what they did in Chicago down to the Waterford class workers and went, oh fuck, we'll do it here. Bang, they had the Citizens Army flag up and whoa, it was getting, you know, it was amazing to see workers occupying their own factories. But, you know, we could never push it further. You know, we could do it in good left-wing workplaces, but we couldn't do it to the class as a whole. I think now that there is actually that kind of, that voice, that radical voice, you've been the resistance inside Parliament, not allowing the Labour Party away with it, attacking them, saying you've got a vendetta on the poor. You know, you're attacking us, you know, when you bring in all these things. That totally spooks Labour. They don't know what to do. You know, they're like rabbits in the headlight, and we are banging their face every day with every attack. So if this can translate into a pole of attraction within the unions as well, and this is very, very important for us, to actually start doing what the people in the Pantheon asked to do, which is workers of Europe, rise up. Thank you.